That was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. 4 security officials were killed, 5 others wounded, as suicide bombers struck across Saudi Arabia Monday, detonating explosives in the holy city Medina at a checkpoint outside one of Islam's holiest sites, the Prophet's Mosque, as well as the eastern city of Qatif and near the U.S. consulate in Jeddah. Amin Saikol is an Arab analyst.
This is the second holiest site for Muslims after Mecca, and therefore it is extremely sacred, and any acts of aggression against the Prophet Muhammad's site would certainly invite a lot of anger and disillusionment on the part of the Muslims around the world.
There was no immediate claim of responsibility, but Islamic State has carried out a series of bombings and shooting attacks in the kingdom over the past 2 years. No foreigners were hurt in Monday's blasts, which occurred as the holy month of Ramadan drew to a close. Saudi Arabia declared Wednesday the first day of Eid al-Fitr, the start of 3 days of festivals across the Muslim world, marking the end of the annual fasting month. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visited Uganda Monday at the start of a 4-country tour to boost trade. Monday also marked the 40th anniversary of the Israeli commando raid at Uganda's main airport in 1976 to rescue Israelis taken captive by Palestinian and German hijackers.
We have gathered here to mark an event that inspired the world and lifted the spirits of my people. At Entebbe, international terrorism suffered a stinging defeat. The rescue mission proved that good can prevail over evil, that hope can triumph over fear.
The raid, which freed over 100 hostages, resulted in the death of Mr. Netanyahu's brother, who led the raid on Entebbe. This is VOA News. In Baghdad, 5 convicted terrorists were executed Monday and arrested dozens of suspected terrorists in the wake of Sunday's massive truck bombing in the central Karada district. The death toll now has reached at least 175, with some 200 others wounded, more than 30 still missing. Rescue workers continue their grim task of searching for more victims. A suicide bomber riding a motorcycle detonated his explosives outside a police station Tuesday in the Indonesian city of Solo, wounding one officer. The capital, Jakarta, was hit in January by a suicide bombing and gun attack by militants linked to Islamic State that left 8 dead, including 4 attackers. Hundreds marched in downtown Nairobi Monday to protest what they condemned as extrajudicial killing of human rights lawyer Willie Kamani, his client, and a driver by police. An official investigation is underway. Authorities said 3 officers have been arrested in connection with the deaths of the 3 who disappeared after a court hearing June 23rd, their bodies found along a riverbank outside the capital. Police have been accused in the past of targeting those looking into allegations of rights abuses by police. The West African country of Guinea-Bissau recorded its first 3 cases of the Zika virus. The World Health Organization says an investigation will try to determine if it's the same strain as the one behind outbreaks linked to head and brain abnormalities in Brazil and elsewhere. South Korea's news agency Yonhap says the country is planning to build 80 artificial reefs near the de facto maritime border with North Korea to try to prevent what Seoul said is illegal fishing by Chinese boats. The man-made reefs will be built in the Yellow Sea near the disputed northern limit line at a cost of $7 million. The U.S. space agency NASA is preparing for the first ever close encounter with the distant planet Jupiter. The solar system's largest planet, the Juno spacecraft launched 5 years ago, will fire a main rocket to slow its speed and try to slip into orbit. Scott Bolton is one of the lead scientists.
And I'm really excited. The team's excited. We're barreling down on Jupiter really quick. It's been an amazing journey. It's hard to believe after 15 years we're finally arriving there.
Scientists will try to navigate Juno around a series of hazards, including rings of debris and dust. They hope to have close-up views of the planet during a 20-month mission that is expected to cost more than $1 billion. Americans Monday took time out to mark their nation's 240th birthday with parades and fireworks. Many events drew tight security over concerns of terrorism. July 4, 1776, the British colonies announced their Declaration of Independence from Britain. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 5th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe police fired tear gas and water cannons on Monday to disperse protesting minibus drivers.
Those that are demonstrating are doing a wonderful job, and we just encourage Zimbabweans to continue and remain to be peaceful. There is no need to be violent, but surely our leaders must also sanitize their thinking.
Stans Vowaza is chairman of vendors in central Harare. Protesters demand an end to extrajudicial killings by Kenyan police. A debate over sexism rekindles in Ghana, and Malawi marks 52nd independence anniversary tomorrow, Wednesday.
We are the blessed nation, despite that going a number of challenges, but it is the same as the Israelites. We are the chosen people, but they were going through a number of challenges as well.
Patricia Kaliati is Malawi's Minister of Gender, Children, Disability and Social Welfare. A local South Sudan soap company is hiring women as a way of empowering them. And the UN calls for a humane and responsible treatment of refugees. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Police in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, on Monday fired tear gas, water cannons, and warning shots at minibus drivers and others protesting alleged police harassment. The protesters claim they are losing a lot of money at police roadblocks, which they say have become money spinners for some police allegedly demanding bribes. Erwin Chifera has details.
The riots in Epworth, Rua, Zimri Park and Dama Falls quickly spread to other parts of the city, resulting in running battles between the police and members of the public. Commuter omnibus drivers said they are losing at least $50 a day after being ticketed by the police, who also allegedly demand bribes. Hundreds of people and school children were left stranded, and anti-riot police responded by moving into the affected areas with water cannons and fired tear gas to disperse the marauding demonstrators. Several people, including two police officers, were injured. Businessman and community leader in Epworth, Nelson Masiwa, who tried to negotiate with the residents, and police said the situation went out of control because the youths are just frustrated.
The cops, they've done all they could do. They actually even went to negotiate with them so that people would disperse, but they refused to disperse. And then at the end of the day, these are unemployed youths, and a lot of ills are happening and everything else. And actually, they don't have anything to do. You are giving them a show as we speak right now. But it's not even a political item. It's not even related to anything. It's just people who are frustrated with how the combis are moving. That's what started this whole thing.
In central Harare, vendors led by their chairperson, Stans Vowaza, demonstrated against President Robert Mugabe's rule and abuse of public funds by his government.
Those that are demonstrating are doing a wonderful job, and we just encourage Zimbabweans to continue and remain to be peaceful so that the process becomes very peaceful. There is no need to be violent, but surely our leaders must also sanitize their thinking so that we all do one thing together as we move along.
Police spokesperson, Senior Assistant Commissioner Chet Charamba, warned those inciting and engaging in violence that they will be dealt with severely. She told a media briefing that police had been deployed in most parts of the city to deal with any public disorder.
Causing mayhem by taking the law into your own hands is not condoned. As police, we have information and intelligence on the identities of some criminal elements who are behind the social unrest. We've put our monitoring teams in place, and all perpetrators of violence will be arrested.
Charamba said though they've reduced the number of roadblocks on the country's roads, security roadblocks will remain, as in their own ways, the situation is tense. But despite Charamba's warnings, indications are that combi operators from suburbs like Budiriro, Mufakos and Kwazana have joined the protests. There were also protests in Marondera and Bindura, while operators and residents in other towns and cities are expected to join the protests tomorrow. Government workers who have not received their June salaries are set to go on strike tomorrow. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Ivan Chipera.
The killing of a human rights lawyer and two other men brought hundreds to the streets of Nairobi on Monday to protest what they call police death squads that killed those who challenged the government. The police chief says that three police officers arrested in the case are rogues and rejects the claim of death squads. VOA's Jill Craig filed this report from the scene of the protests.
Here in Nairobi, a few hundred human rights activists have gathered to march and protest the deaths of Willie Kimani, a human rights lawyer, his client, Joseph Atmawinda, a motorcycle taxi operator, and Joseph Maruri, their taxi driver. The three men disappeared on June 23rd, following a court hearing in which Kimani was defending his client against police charges following a traffic stop gone wrong. The three are believed to have been taken to an administrative police compound. On Friday, the three missing men's bodies were found in a river about 70 kilometers from Nairobi. Boniface Mwangi is a Kenyan human rights activist.
There's been a habit by the Kenyan government when they do not agree with someone or when they have a problem with someone, instead of actually taking them to the proper government channels, they kill them. I think there's also fear among the professionals because in the past they've been killing a poor taxi driver, a suspected gangster or terrorist, but they've gone beyond that and now they're killing professionals.
Say stop extrajudicial killings. Others carry buckets of red paint to symbolize bloodshed. Many of the protesters are wearing t-shirts that say stop police executions. The activists say they've come here for justice, full accountability, and they are demanding the resignation of the Deputy Inspector General of the Administrative Police, as well as the Inspector General of Police. They're also demanding an inquiry into all extrajudicial killings in Kenya. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Malawi's Minister of Gender, Children, Disability and Social Welfare says the country is blessed in spite of some challenges. Patricia Kaliati says Malawians enjoy freedom. This comes as the country celebrates its 52nd independence anniversary from Britain tomorrow, Wednesday. It also comes at a time that the country's Roman Catholic bishops say hunger is a national crisis and call on the government to take steps to provide immediate and long-term solutions. Minister Kaliati says hunger is not unique to Malawi and the country has a lot to be thankful for on this Independence Day.
One, we are celebrating the independence itself. For us being independent since 1964 to now, that's an achievement which we are celebrating ourselves on 6th of July. But now, looking into the theme of committed to patriotism, integrity, and hard working for a prosperous Malawi with the help of God. This is what we are looking forward to, that we need to be patriotic to our own country. We need to also be integrity as we look into the affairs of everybody. And also focusing on the hard working part of it as we are developing our nation with the help of our Lord. And we thank God. He has been with us for the 52nd anniversary of our independence. It's not easy. We are the blessed nation, despite that going a number of challenges. But it is the same as the Israelites. We are the chosen people, but they were going through a number of challenges as well. So we are celebrating that we are the blessed nation. Comparing to maybe to our friends, we are really independent and we've been with God. We have the freedom. So we'd like to thank God as we are celebrating our independence. And this is the way how we've chosen to celebrate our day.
So what are some of the festivities?
There are activities which are going to have. It's worship, and there are a number of them where we'll be praising the Lord, we'll be asking Him to be with us, we'll be singing and dancing, thanking the Lord for the life, for the goodness, and also asking Him to be with us as we are looking forward to love our nation, to maintain the integrity as we are looking into the affairs of everybody, and also to promote the hard working among us Malawians so that we make our nation prosper.
I was reading an article about the Catholic bishops saying that hunger is a national crisis in Malawi, calling on the government to take action to tackle this national crisis. What do you make of that?
The hunger is a global problem. It's not a Malawian problem. It's because of the climate change, which is a global thing. And that's why member states, when the NATO and the UN, they decided on having all the sustainable development goals where we are saying we should not leave anyone behind. It means it's not a problem for Malawians. So that the bishops, as much as we appreciate, yes, they are asking us to be patriotic, integrity as well as hardworking so that we can encounter all those.
How do you think Malawi is faring now politically in terms of multi-party democracy?
Malawi is faring good, and that's why you were able to ask us this time.
Still on the bishops, there was an article that said the state spies put Catholic Bishop Ntumbuka, Malawi activist, under surveillance over regime change agenda. Is this true? Is he under surveillance?
Open one. In fact, when you are asking us how we are celebrating our independence, issues of regime change, issues of whatever. In fact, you are not asking me to respond on the Archbishop Ntumbuka. Then if you ask me to respond on the Archbishop Ntumbuka, what he said, then you are not doing us good. Remember, we are saying we are committed to patriotism, integrity, hardworking for a prosperous Malawi with the help of God. And for me to be responding what the man of God whom we believe he stands in the shoes of Jesus Christ with your questions, that we've got to march that with our independence, then I'm not going to do good deed to the Malawians.
Patricia Kaliati is Malawi's Minister of Gender, Children, Disability and Social Welfare. She was speaking with me from the capital, Blantyre. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Tuesday, July 5th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Last week, a male member of Ghana's parliament accused the new electoral commission chief, a woman, of trading sexual favors to get her post. The ensuing controversy has rekindled debate over sexism in politics. Francesca Kekra-Fosum has the story from Accra.
Women may hold some of the highest positions in Ghana, including attorney general and foreign affairs minister. But if you think the country doesn't have a gender problem, you may need to think again. The president appointed Charlotte Osei, head of the Electoral Commission, in June 2015. She's the first woman to hold the position. A male lawmaker, Kennedy Ejiofor, said in a speech last month to supporters in southern Ghana that Osei gave sex in exchange for her job. His comments have opened the figurative floodgates on the issues of sexism and discrimination. Women have protested in Koforidua in the eastern region and on social media under the hashtag #IAmCharlotteOsei. So do men sleep their way to the top? Wrote one woman on Facebook. Another wrote, "This attitude affects us all. It's time for change." Ursula Owusu Ekufo has been an opposition MP for 8 years. She's no stranger to insults and says she has even been called a prostitute.
I've had a few run-ins with my male colleagues. One of them actually had the nerve to tell me that I am a woman, I should be serving them dinner. Another person also in committee said that, do I think I'm in my kitchen? All statements which reflect the state of mind that many of the male colleagues in parliament also have about the women.
She says she sent a complaint to the Speaker of Parliament about the kitchen comment in 2015. But nothing has come of it. And she says women in government are punished more harshly. In 2013, a deputy communications minister, Victoria Hammer, was sacked after she was recorded in a private conversation allegedly saying she would not quit politics until she made $1 million. Hammer says she hopes her SAR experience does not deter other women out there with political ambitions.
Politics is a tough area to operate, and it's difficult for both men and women. Men also go through their own experience in politics. There are men who were former ministers who had to go to prison for some lack of due diligence. And so if we do not encourage women to go into politics for whatever reason, then we can never achieve equalization. No matter what it is, the struggle is always continuous.
The government insists there's no double standard. Nana Oyelatha is Minister for Gender, Children and Social Protection.
Women are not asking for favors or to be given a carte blanche. The fact that we are female ministers does not mean that we are immune from the code of ethics and from the code of conduct that guides public service.
But prominent women say their treatment reflects the patriarchal nature of the Ghanaian society. Francesca Kekra-Fosun for VOA News, Accra.
A local soap-producing company in South Sudan is hiring women as a way of empowering them. Tito Justin of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports from Juba.
A machine at Junubi Soap Company in Juba foam soap bars out of palm oil and water-based products. This is the first soap-producing company established in South Sudan since the economic crisis began. Junubi sells at least 750 cartons a day of blue and white bars of soap to the locals in Juba. Most of the soap ingredients are imported from Kenya. Sometimes when company managers run out of stock, they use lul oil made locally in South Sudan to produce the soap. It takes three steps to process bars of soap before the product can be packaged and sold. Jacqueline Apath Majong is a lawyer and chief executive officer of the company. Apath says she wants to use the money she has earned to empower South Sudanese women whom she says have suffered so much during the war.
When they have nothing, and especially here in Southern Sudan, the number of widows, there are many who they cannot be able to afford the education to their children. And there is other women also, they are not widows, but they cannot be able to afford the job. They are not educated.
The machine costs $10,000 and produces 500 cartons of soap in 8 hours. The soap is sold wholesale to local retail traders in Juba. Apath says the company also provides capacity building to women since most of her employees did not go to school.
In the soap industry, we are not looking for educated women. We educate that woman to be educated lady. We show her what to do. We taught her. At the end of the day, they have classes to go. Before 5, they leave the company. They have to go to classes for 1 hour. Then they go. So that you explain knowledge what you have gotten. And we speak with them in English and Arabic so that they can understand.
Asunta Aluel is an employee at the Junubi Soap Company. She says this is her first job. She earns £50 a day and about £1,500 a month. The money Aluel receives is equivalent to monthly salaries of undergraduate employees working in public institutions in South Sudan. Speaking in Arabic, Aluel says the job has changed her life.
When I was not working, I suffered. Now as I work, I'm fine. You will need to work to help your children at home. If you stay without work, you will not be able to help your children.
The Junubi Soap Company started in 2008 with only limited production. The company is aimed at marketing its product in other states across South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
At least 150 heads of state are expected to attend a UN summit on refugees and migrants in September this year in New York. The focus is to get new global commitments to address large movements of refugees and migrants responsibly and humanely. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More people than ever are on the move. The UN Refugee Agency reports 65 million people were forcibly displaced last year. That includes 20 million refugees, with the rest internally displaced. In addition, tens of millions of people fleeing poverty, climate change, or natural disasters are migrating to other countries in search of a better life. The United Nations says individual countries cannot solve problems of mass migration on their own. It says international cooperation is needed to manage refugee and migration flows in a responsible and orderly manner. Special advisor for the September UN summit, Karen Koenig Abu Zaid, agrees the statistics on migration are daunting, but she says it is wrong for countries to view rising migration only as a crisis.
It certainly is a crisis for the families of refugees and migrants sometimes involved, and for the countries that are affected by this displacement, is that it doesn't have to be a crisis if we bring everyone together to work together, all the states and the UN entities and so on.
Because refugees and migrants cross international borders, sometimes multiple borders, Abu Zaid says states have to work together. She says the actions of one state have repercussions for others.
One good recent example, of course, is what Kenya has suggested about sending its refugees back, the ones they've had for 3 decades, and 200,000 of them in rather squalid conditions. And as soon as they said that, then we began to hear the same sorts of messages from Sudan, from Ethiopia, and elsewhere.
The summit will explore measures for addressing the root causes of displacement and for prosecuting criminal smugglers and traffickers. The United Nations recommends states improve the reception of people on the move and treat those who cross borders in a humane way. To counter the negative tone surrounding refugees and migrants, Abu Zaid says the United Nations will lead a global campaign to conquer xenophobia. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Etegwene, South Africa. A very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with the basketball. Uganda will represent East Africa region at the FIBA Africa Zone 5 Under-18 tournaments following their convincing victories over the visiting Kenyans in Kampala over the weekend. On Sunday, Uganda women edged Kenya 71-62 before the men won 72-59. Early on Saturday, the Ugandan girls outwitted the visitors 81-68 before the men triumphed 80-58. The Boys Africa Under 18 tournament takes place in Kigali, Rwanda later this month, while the girls' event is in Cairo, Egypt in August. Elsewhere, Algeria qualified for the FIBA Men's Under 18 tournament convincingly in their matches against Morocco. Algeria edged Morocco 69-60 in their first match before going on to win 69-44 in the second fixture. Both matches were played in Algiers. Turning to rugby, hosts Tunisia overpowered Ivory Coast 50-5 in the Africa Cup Group B encounter in Monastir on Saturday. Earlier on, Tunisia dismissed Botswana 43-10, while Ivory Coast outwitted Botswana 20-13. Moving on to handball, Tunisia lost 34-22 to France. Denmark edged Angola 28-24. As Spain outwitted Egypt 30-21 at the World Women's Under-20 Handball Championships in Moscow, Russia on Sunday. Finally, in athletics, Kenyan defending champion Kenneth Mungara retained his Gold Coast Marathon title in Australia in a winning time of 2 hours and 9 minutes on Sunday. Ethiopian Chala Tolesa and Kenyan Leah Kiprono were second and third in the women's race. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Etegwini, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good day. Here's our listener mail for this Tuesday morning, July 5th.
Africa. This is Albert Alagbo from the Department of Public Administration in Akanibam Federal Polytechnic, Nigeria. You will permit me use your medium to congratulate the government and the citizens of the United States of America on this day, 4th July of their Independence Day. I enjoy your unity for 240 years of independence.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. And that is it for this Tuesday, July 5th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Ouman, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very, very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the 18-year prison sentence given to former Congolese Vice President Jean-Pierre Bemba by the International Criminal Court for rape and murder in the Central African Republic. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.